All right, let's dive into this Fairwind Sailing v. Dempster case you sent over.
Yeah.
It looks like we're tackling trade dress and unjust enrichment claims.
Exactly.
Trying to figure out how those play out in court, what makes a pleading really hit the mark or totally miss. So this deep dive, we're going to break down this Third Circuit case
Okay.
and see what lessons it holds for anyone in a competitive business or, anyone thinking about protecting their IP.
Right.
So we've got Fairwind, this sailing school, and their competitor, Dempster, and the legal battle that went down between them.
Interesting.
Our goal here is to like pull out those key insights about what makes a pleading deficient and how the rules around attorney's fees are evolving.
Yeah, that attorney's fees piece is always tricky.
Right. That can be a real game changer.
Huge.
Yeah.
Especially in these kinds of cases where you have a smaller business
Exactly.
going up against maybe a larger competitor or someone who's, maybe being a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, well, this is a case that kind of has it all. You've got a former employee starting a competing business.
Right.
You've got allegations of copying, all sorts of interesting stuff.
It really highlights a lot of the common issues that come up in these kinds of disputes.
All right, so let's set the stage.
Okay.
Fairwind is this sailing school in St. Thomas. They've got this fleet of 45-foot catamarans,
This
Yeah, pretty nice.
sounds like a good gig.
Yeah, right. Back in 2010, they briefly employed this guy, Scott Dempster, but things don't really work out and they let him go.
Okay.
Fast forward a bit, and Dempster starts his own sailing school
Oh,
called
man.
Virgin Islands Sailing School, VISS,
VISS. Okay.
right in the same location. And guess what? Similar boats,
Oh, come on.
similar curriculum,
Oh,
similar marketing.
that's tough.
Yeah, Fairwind is not happy about
I
this.
can't imagine.
So they decide to sue Dempster and VISS.
All right.
And they really throw everything they can at them in that initial lawsuit.
Like, what kind of claims?
Claims for trade dress infringement, tortious interference, and unjust enrichment.
Wow, the whole shebang.
Yeah, they're not messing around.
No, they're not.
So, looking at this initial situation, what jumps out at you?
Well, I think it's a pretty classic scenario, right? You've got an established business,
Yeah.
and then you've got this new competitor who seems to be kind of mimicking their whole thing.
Right.
And the fact that Dempster was a former employee, that definitely adds another layer of complexity there.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder if he was using inside knowledge to
Yeah.
his advantage.
Yeah, and the fact that Fairwind brought all these different claims shows how seriously they were taking this.
Yeah.
They wanted to protect themselves from every angle.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Fairwind files their lawsuit in district court, but they run into trouble pretty quickly.
Oh, what happened?
The judge dismisses their trade dress and unjust enrichment claims.
Wow, just like that.
Yeah, right off the bat,
Why?
under Rule 12b6.
Rule 12b6. So that means the court basically said.
Basically, the court looked at their complaint and said, even if everything you're alleging is true, you haven't actually stated a valid legal claim here.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So what did Fairwind do?
So they drop their tortious interference claim
Okay.
and decide to appeal the dismissal of the other two.
All right, so they're not giving up.
Yeah.
They're taking it to the next level.
And this is where things get a little bit interesting.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
The Third Circuit Court of Appeals largely agrees with the lower court,
Okay.
saying, yeah, those claims were properly dismissed. But they disagree with the lower court's decision to make Fairwind pay Dempster's attorney's fees.
Oh, interesting. So even though Fairwind lost,
Yeah.
the appeals court said they shouldn't have to pay the other side's legal bills.
Exactly.
So why was that? What was the thinking there?
Well, that's what we're going to dig into right now.
Okay, let's get into it.
We need to understand why those initial claims fail so spectacularly.
Yeah, because a Rule 12b6 dismissal, that's not good.
No, it's not a good sign.
It means there were some serious problems with how they presented their case,
Right.
like fundamental flaws in their legal argument.
Exactly.
Not just that they didn't have enough evidence,
Right.
but that their whole theory of the case was off.
Okay, so let's zoom in on this trade dress issue first.
Right, trade dress.
This is all about the overall look and feel of a product or service, the visual package that tells consumers where it comes from.
Like the whole branding aesthetic,
Exactly.
the vibe.
It's the vibe, yeah.
So what was Fairwind arguing here? what did they say was their trade dress?
So they were saying that Dempster was copying their trade dress by using similar boats.
Okay.
A similar curriculum and similar marketing materials.
So basically they were saying he copied their whole business model.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that's not necessarily enough to win a trade dress claim, right?
Right. You can't just claim trade dress over your entire business model.
Yeah.
There are specific elements that you need to identify and protect.
So what went wrong with Fairwind's argument?
Well, for one thing, the court said that the elements they were trying to protect were mostly functional.
Functional. What does that mean?
It means that they were things that were necessary for running a sailing school.
Oh, okay. So like using catamarans.
Exactly.
Because that's what you use for sailing and having a curriculum because you need to teach people how to sail.
Right.
You can't really trademark the idea of having a sailing curriculum.
And
it's just part of what a sailing school does.
And the Third Circuit really emphasized that you can't use trade dress law to monopolize features that are essential to how an industry works.
Makes sense.
It's like saying you want to trademark the idea of having a menu at a restaurant.
Right.
It's just too basic.
It's too fundamental to the service itself.
And on top of that, Fairwind didn't offer any evidence to show that customers specifically associated those general features with their school.
So no customer surveys or anything like that?
No.
To show that people were actually confused, mm-hmm. thinking that Dempster School was somehow connected to Fairwind.
Exactly.
So it's not just about identifying the elements.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about showing that those elements have acquired a secondary meaning
right.
in the minds of consumers.
Yeah, they have to be distinctive enough that people recognize them
right.
and connect them with your specific brand.
Like when you see the Golden Arches, you think McDonald's.
Exactly.
Or the Apple logo, you think Apple products.
Right.
Fairwind didn't really do that.
No, they didn't. And that was a big problem for their case.
Okay, so that's trade dress.
Yep.
What about unjust enrichment?
So let's move on to unjust enrichment.
Okay.
This claim is basically saying that if someone benefits unfairly at your expense,
mm-hmm.
they might have to pay you back even if there wasn't a formal contract.
Right. So it's kind of like a catch-all for yeah. situations where someone's been wronged.
Yeah, but it's not a free-for-all.
Right.
You still have to prove specific elements.
So what are those elements?
You have to show that the defendant actually benefited.
Okay.
That the benefit came at the plaintiff's expense,
mm-hmm.
and that it would be unjust for them to keep that benefit without compensating the plaintiff.
Okay, so what was Fairwind's argument here? How did they say Dempster was unjustly enriched?
Their argument was basically, Dempster is profiting from a sailing school that is very similar to ours.
Okay.
And he's doing it in the same location where we operate.
And they were saying that's inherently unjust.
Yeah, basically.
But is that enough?
Well, no, not really.
What was missing?
They didn't provide specific facts to show that Dempster's gain was directly caused by their loss.
Oh, I see. So they needed to connect the dots.
Right. They had to show a clear causal link.
Give me an example.
Like, imagine if they could show that Dempster had stolen their client list.
Oh, yeah.
Or that he was specifically targeting their customers.
That would be more compelling.
Right. That would be more concrete evidence of unjust enrichment.
And that would also meet that requirement of showing that the benefit came at the plaintiff's expense.
Exactly.
So it's not enough to just say, hey, this guy's doing well and we think it's unfair.
No, you have to go deeper than that.
You need the receipts.
Exactly. You need the receipts.
Okay. So we've talked about trade dress and unjust enrichment
mm-hmm.
and how Fairwind's claims fell short.
Right.
But what about those attorney's fees? You mentioned there was a twist there.
Right. So remember how the district court dismissed Fairwind's claims?
Yeah.
But then they also ordered Fairwind to pay Dempster's attorney's fees.
Right. That seemed a little harsh.
Yeah. The Third Circuit thought so, too.
Okay. So they overturned that decision.
They did.
Why?
Because of a very specific rule about attorney's fees in Lanham Act cases.
The Lanham Act, that's the federal trademark law, right?
Right. And trade dress infringement falls under the Lanham Act.
Okay.
And the Lanham Act says that attorney's fees can only be awarded in exceptional cases.
Exceptional? So, like, what does that mean?
Well, the district court applied Virgin Islands law to the whole case.
Mm-hmm.
But the Third Circuit said, no, you have to apply the Octane Fitness standard to the trade dress claim.
Octane Fitness. Now, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, it's a pretty important Supreme Court case.
Refresh my memory. What was that all about?
Basically, Octane Fitness changed the definition of exceptional in trademark cases.
Okay.
It used to be that you had to show the losing party acted in bad faith.
Like they were intentionally being malicious or deceptive.
Right.
But Octane Fitness lowered the bar a bit.
Yeah. It made it easier to get attorney's fees.
So what's the standard now?
Now, a case can be considered exceptional if there's a big difference in the strength of each side's legal arguments.
Okay.
Or if the losing party litigated the case unreasonably.
So, like, if they were being overly aggressive or filing frivolous motions.
Exactly.
So even though Fairwind lost their main claims, this whole issue of attorney's fees became a big deal.
Yeah, it just goes to show that even if you win, you might still end up paying the other side's legal bills. All right, so let's wrap this up.
Okay.
What are the key takeaways here?
Well, I think for anyone in business.
Yeah.
This case really shows how important it is to be super clear about what makes your brand unique.
Right.
And to understand what aspects of your business are actually protectable.
Exactly.
You can't just claim trade dress over common industry practices.
Nope.
Or things that are essential to how your business operates.
Like using catamarans for a sailing school.
Exactly.
You have to focus on those specific non-functional elements that really set your brand apart. And we also saw how crucial it is to have concrete evidence.
Yeah.
When you're making claims like unjust enrichment.
You need to connect the dots.
Right.
Show that causal link between the defendant's gain and your loss.
Exactly.
You can't just rely on vague allegations of unfairness.
And finally, the Octane Fitness case is a good reminder that the legal landscape is constantly shifting.
Yeah.
So you need to stay informed about the latest developments.
Especially when it comes to things like attorney's fees.
Right, because those can have a huge impact on your bottom line.
Absolutely.
So what do you think? How do these lessons apply to you?
Well, for me, it's a good reminder to always be thinking strategically about how to protect my own intellectual property.
Right.
And to be prepared for the possibility of litigation.
Yeah. It's definitely something to keep in mind.
Definitely.
Especially in today's competitive environment.
Where everyone's trying to get an edge.
Right. And the rules of the game are constantly changing.
Exactly.
So it's always good to have a solid legal strategy in place.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it for today.
Yeah. That was a great discussion.
Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
And thanks everyone out there for listening to the LexWug podcast.
Yeah. Thanks everyone.
We'll see you next time.
See you later.